Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Celeste Ng is the best-selling author of Little Fires Everywhere. Her new novel is about a mother's unbreakable love in a world consumed by fear. Our Missing Hearts is an old story made new of the way supposedly civilized communities can ignore the most searing injustice. It's a story about the power and the limitations of art to create change, the lessons and legacies we pass on to our kids, and how any of us can survive a broken world with our hearts intact. The novel is told by a 12-year-old boy named Bird. Bird's mother was a Chinese-American poet who disappeared a few years before. He then embarks on a journey to put together the pieces through an underground network of librarians. Celeste Ng is the author of Everything I Never Told You and Little Fires Everywhere. She is the recipient of fellowships from the National Endowment for the Arts and the Guggenheim Foundation, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Celeste Ng to this week's book show. Celeste, thank you very much for being with us. A delight to have you on the program.
Thank you so much for having me on.
What brought you to this particular subject in this particular somewhat dystopian place?
Honestly, it started with a story of a mother and a son. I was writing about an artist mother in my second novel, and I started imagining, what if there was a mother whose son didn't understand what her work was about, and maybe even saw it as a rival? And so I started writing what I thought was going to be a fairly realistic novel. And this was in about October of 2016. And so shortly thereafter, we had the 2016 presidential election. We saw the far right beginning to rise, real increase in xenophobia, all kinds of discrimination. And when the outside world started to feel a little dystopian, it seemed strange to me to pretend that wasn't happening in the world of the book. And so I kind of leaned into that and I started writing a story that let me explore all the questions I was asking myself in the real world.
You do say in the author's note at the end that Bird and Margaret's world isn't exactly our world, but it isn't not ours either. And you make the point that most of the events and occurrences in the book do not have direct analogs, but are certainly inspired from many real life events, which you certainly feel in reading the novel. Bring us to this boy, Bird, and ultimately what his challenges are at the beginning as he's trying to figure out what is happening, most notably with his mother.
Bird is a 12-year-old boy. Bird is a nickname that he's chosen for himself. But when the book opens, he's growing up without a mother. His mother has left the family some years before. And the world that Bird and his father are living in is a world that's really kind of consumed by fear. The nation has gone through a big crisis, and new laws have been passed to encourage American behavior, heavily in quotes, and to punish anyone who seems to be acting un-American. And that's often being applied towards Chinese Americans or towards anyone who looks like they might be Chinese American or speaks out on their behalf. And at the beginning of the world, Bird is living a very quiet existence, but he gets this mysterious letter from his mother, and he starts to wonder where she is, where she's gone, and he leaves home and goes out on a quest to find her. And that's sort of how the novel begins.
What is it about that separation that at that moment Bird's mother wanted to be in touch?
Unbeknownst to Bird, his mother has been out in the world, sort of a fugitive. She's been planning a big political action. He learns along the way that she's become sort of the face of resistance of these laws that are sort of unjust. And he wants to go out and try and find her, and she wants him to find her before she takes this big political action. You get the sense that she's got something that she wants to tell him, and he wants to go and find out what it is.
Before we start talking about their relationship, I was also fascinated by the relationship between Bird and his father. I mean, he's the one left, really, to try to kind of keep things as normal as they can be.
Yeah, Ethan, who is Bird's father, is a white man, and Margaret, Bird's mother, is a Chinese American. And so when she leaves the family in the face of these discriminatory laws, Ethan is the one who is raising their son. And one of the ways that he tries to protect Bird is to try to encourage him to not stand out, to kind of blend in. And at the same time, I think this is really painful for him because he has to essentially pretend his wife, Bird's mother, is no longer part of the picture. I feel a huge sympathy for him. And we start to learn much more about him through the book and the past that he and Bird's mother shared.
You introduce this very early into the book about this organization or this idea that is sort of overtaking everything, which is called PACT. P-A-C-T. There's even worksheets that they're given as homework, the three pillars of PACT: outlaws promotion of un-American values and behavior, encourages all citizens to report potential threats to our society, and protects children from environments espousing harmful views. Obviously, this is, cuts very close to home, but I'm curious as to your idea of PACT in your mind and the fiction of it, of what rules it sets up for you as a writer to navigate.
Yeah, and growing up as a Chinese American and Chinese American woman, I think I've always been aware of the fact that people will see my face and assume that I'm other, that I'm not from here or that I don't belong, even though I grew up in Ohio. And it was interesting to me to explore a world where that kind of prejudgment could be used by the government to, you know, to dictate what I was allowed to do or what kind of behavior I was allowed to have, you know, that I could be considered un-American simply by virtue of what my background was. And as I created this world, I realized that Bird's ethnicity was going to be part of his struggle. I wanted to kind of explore a world where those laws were always around for him. And what would that be like to grow up in that situation?
We are talking to Celeste Ng. The new novel is Our Missing Hearts, published by Penguin Press. In your novel, what got us to that particular place in the world?
The country had been going through an economic crisis that then turned into a social crisis. Throughout the book, I was looking at different examples of times in history where similar things had happened. And I was thinking about the Great Depression. And I was thinking about the recession of 2008, where homes were being foreclosed on and people were widely out of work. And I wanted to kind of nod to that and look at the ways that when the economy goes south, our tendency is to look for someone to blame. And usually we're looking for someone outside. And in this particular case, China is seen as the enemy, the one that's causing this. And that's something that we are actually hearing now. We're hearing a lot of finger pointing at China of being our next big enemy. And that's something that concerns me a little bit.
How much of this, of course, the pandemic brought a very sharp increase in discrimination, anti-Asian discrimination. I assume you were well on your way in writing this book at that point, but it has to kind of underscore everything that you're exploring.
It absolutely did. I was well into the book, as you say. And I was, in fact, shying away a little bit from talking about some of the anti-Asian discrimination that I thought was going to be in this world. And when the pandemic hit and we started to see this huge explosion of violence against Asian Americans, it felt really important to actually go there in the book and to kind of witness this. And so one of the scenes in the book where Bird is alone in New York and he witnesses an attack on an Asian American woman was actually inspired by some of the attacks that we saw in the news that were caught on film.
And those were really disturbing attacks, and they were justified in many ways and in many quarters of our political world. And how do you make any sense of that?
That's one of the things that I'm struggling with just as a person, not even as a writer, about how people can justify those things or even just look away from them. One of the most chilling cases of those that I saw was caught on security video. There was a man attacking an Asian American, and nobody did anything except for the doorman in the building that they were in front of, who came out and closed the door. And that was a really horrifying moment for me to see that people could decide, I'm not going to get involved. I'm just going to look away and let this happen. And that's one of the questions I hope readers will come away with, which is, if I saw that, what would I do?
There is this fear in this family, and it's so telling of how shattering this is to this family. I'm curious as to the extrapolation on your part of taking it from, let's say, that moment of what you saw in one of those news clips to, all right, then what happens with that family when the camera is looking away?
My tendency as a writer is always to kind of imagine myself into the lives of the people that I see and into a particular person. I don't know if this is answering your question or not, but I think that we can talk a lot about sort of big societal issues. We can talk about, you know, Asian American violence, but what makes it very particular is going down to one specific family. And so Bird's family in this case was one where he is quite literally belonging to two worlds. His mother is a Chinese American and his father is white. And to kind of tease out the ways that all the members of that family might react to this situation, that's where it gets interesting to me as a writer, is when we get down to the human level, what very specific people would do, rather than thinking about it as an academic talking point or a political topic.
So tell us about the mother in the book, Margaret, and her work and the realization and the understanding that Bird eventually comes to of what his mother is doing and how his mother is viewed outside of his immediate world.
Margaret, Bird's mother, is a poet. She's written a book of poems, the title of which is Our Missing Hearts. And at a certain point in Bird's early childhood, protesters who are protesting PACT, this series of repressive laws, take a line from Margaret's poem and use it as the slogan for their resistance movement. And because of this, Margaret is seen as fomenting anti-American dissent. And that's part of the reason that she ends up leaving. Bird always imagines that she's chosen this other life over him. But I don't think this is too much of a spoiler. When he finds out a little bit more about why she's left, he understands that it wasn't entirely her choice and that some of what she did was to protect him. As he starts to understand her background and her history, he starts to see all of their relationship in a new light, and he starts to have a better understanding of why she might have left him, this thing that to so many parents is sort of unthinkable.
The father is working at a library shelving books. Bird is in this apartment with his father. This is all very small, right? It's a it's a very enclosed atmosphere.
Yeah, it fits off very small because I think at that age, again, Bird is 12, that's kind of the moment at which, for many of us, we start waking up to the fact that there is a larger world. Up until then, when you're a child, your world tends to be quite small and constrained. It's mostly your family, your house, maybe your neighborhood. And for Bird, it's literally this very small apartment with just his father. And when he goes out looking for his mother, he's literally leaving home. He leaves the city that he's been born in and that he's grown up in, and he goes out into the wider world. He goes to New York. And there he starts to get a sense of, again, the larger context of the world that he's in. And that's intentional. That's what I think happens to us a lot of times around that age. We realize that there was history before we came along, and that we're just one moment in time. We start to get a sense of perspective, and we start to realize that our parents have lives outside of us, and that's sort of what happens to Bird. He realizes that there's this whole other side to his mother. She has this whole other past that he had not been aware of.
Does this book take on, and for want of a better term, and feel free to correct me, but is anger the word? Is it a more angry book than you would have originally anticipated?
It's interesting because I don't think of it as an angry book exactly. I think of it as being sort of a more straightforward look at some of the things that I think I had explored a little bit more at an angle in other books. I think because of the political atmosphere of the past few years, it felt more important to be direct and to sort of say up front, this is what I see, or these are the questions that I have. It felt more urgent in a way to say that without mincing words in some ways. But also, I think to call people's attention to it. And hopefully in doing that, to inspire even a little bit of hope, to have people say, is this the way that we want to go? And if it's not, what are we going to do differently?
Yes, I would like to reframe the question because I understand, because the book does not come off, I don't think, at all angry. But what I'm wondering is, does it come as a result of your anger as to what was playing out on our political stage and even continues to at some extent?
I guess it does, because I certainly will admit that I have anger about a lot of things that have happened over the past several years. But for me, really honestly, the book did come out of looking for hope, particularly when the pandemic started, but certainly well before that. I was asking myself a lot of sort of large existential questions. I was feeling very helpless and useless because it seemed like there were so many problems in the world that were so big and so widespread, and it seemed like one person couldn't do anything about it. But then what do you do? And so I was asking myself these questions, and I was asking myself, well, how do I try and raise my son in a world that feels like it might be very hostile to him? That's kind of where the book came from, was me trying to figure out, how do you hold on to hope? What are we actually fighting for? And one thing I realized is that as much as art sometimes feels to me like I'm not doing anything, like I sometimes wish I were a doctor so I could be, you know, working in a hospital and saving lives. I wish I were, you know, a lawyer or a labor organizer or somebody who could do something very tangible. I realized that I turn to art to try and find that hope. So I'm listening to, you know, music, I'm reading my favorite poems, I'm reading my favorite books. And that's one of the things that I hope art can do, and I hope the book does, is it sort of reminds you that the world could be different. And it gives you a space to kind of imagine what you might do.
When you think of what you might do, were you always sure what Margaret would do?
I had an idea of what she was going to do from the beginning. And for me, the question became less sort of, is that the right place? I felt instinctively it was the right place, but how do I get the reader, and even more importantly, Bird, her child, to understand why she would do this sort of thing? That was the challenge for me.
Well, one of the things that is absolutely beautiful about this is this underground network of librarians who are trying to connect families with their children who have been taken. As the son of a librarian, I already think of librarians as heroes. So so any book that has them as heroes is certainly a favorite. But how did you come up with that plot, that idea of this network, specifically of librarians who are looking to try to piece that puzzle together?
I'm so glad you asked this question because it gives me a chance to talk about how much I love libraries and librarians. I grew up going to the public library. My dad would take me like on a weekend, like just like for an activity, and we would spend hours there. And it did feel like a magical place to me, that there was all this information and I was allowed to explore and I was allowed to read anything that I wanted. And that felt very powerful to me as a young child. And as an adult, I would take my laptop and I would go and write in the library. And while I was there, I would hear the reference librarians helping other patrons.
Right.
And one of the things that struck me was how devoted they were to just helping people find whatever information they needed. Didn't matter what it was. It didn't matter why. They didn't ask questions. Someone would come in saying, I need to do my taxes. I've never done taxes before. Help me. Where do I start? And they would find them the right forms. They would find them the instructions. They'd work through it with them. They'd walk them through filing. Someone would say, I want to research my family history or the history of my house. Someone come in and say, I need to learn Spanish. You know, it didn't matter. The librarians were just like, you want to learn? You want information? I will help you. And that seems so not only admirable, but like kind of revolutionary in a way, that they just wanted to help people find information. And so in the novel, when I was thinking about who might step into this gap, there are children who are being taken away from their families and no one knows exactly where they're going. Who would be trying to track down that information and then hold on to it until a time where they might be able to use it? The answer immediately was librarians. I kind of couldn't imagine anyone else who could fit that role so perfectly.
Because they are the ones who have for so long given us that freedom of getting information.
Exactly. And there is something particularly heroic about doing that, of saying that we don't know what the future is going to be, but this information might be useful. We're going to hold on to it because we think that in the future, this will be useful. There's something kind of really far-seeing about that. And I just think it's so admirable. And there are also, you know, there are lots of rules in the library that whatever you look at, that is yours. It's private. One day I remember sitting in the library and there was a group of high school students in Cambridge. The high school is directly next to the main public library. So they were getting a tour of the library facilities and the librarian made a point of saying, whatever you look at, we do not share that with anyone. We don't share it with your teachers. We don't share it with your parents. That information is yours. And again, that idea that you are allowed to have an inner self, you are allowed to be interested in things and not have to account for them publicly, again, feels like such a crucial thing and such a crucial underpinning of the society that I want to live in.
The librarian says in the novel that people don't burn books, they pulp them and they turn them into toilet paper. That's an interesting turn, isn't it, on?
So one interviewer asked me, she said, you know, I know you wrote some of this during the pandemic. Do you think that was influenced by the great toilet paper shortage of 2020? And I had not considered that. I guess that line really came from, you know, we associate book burnings with fascism, World War II. We think of Nazis burning books in the public square.
Right.
And we like to think, oh, well, that would never happen, right? We like to think, oh, that was just something in the past. But the truth is that we still do remove books, right? There is still this danger. It's just what we do with them might be slightly different.
And the librarian in your novel jokes, well, this idea of pulping is much more civilized. And as if that is a way, I mean, obviously the impact is the same, but this is a way that is can be perceived as more civilized.
Yeah, it's sort of the same idea, just dressed up in nicer clothes, right? It's almost a little bit, you can rationalize it a little bit more by saying, oh, we're reusing them, right? It's not wasteful. But of course, when you look at it a little bit more closely, you realize it's the same idea and maybe not actually that much better.
As we talk and as this book comes out into the world, there are libraries and school districts who are having major debates over what material should be allowed in libraries and school libraries and public libraries. And I wonder how you think of sending a book, especially one that makes the points that this book does, of sending it out into the world at this particular time.
I mean, I am not happy that there is a need to talk about these issues now, but I am really happy if my book can draw some attention to that. I was writing this book well before the recent efforts to ban books came into the news, but it's something that has happened and, you know, was ongoing and now is sort of reaching a fever pitch. The idea that a small group of people could say, no one has the right to read this book. It should not be available. Mm. It should not exist. To me, that's really dangerous because what it's doing is it's essentially saying some kinds of stories are worth telling and some stories are not worth telling and in fact should not be told. It feels like moving down a very dangerous path. When we don't look at history, we tend to repeat it. And so the idea, for example, that we would not want to look at books that talked about enslavement, for example, or civil rights struggles, in a way is trying to remove that history. that's something that I'm really glad that librarians are standing up to talk about, that book people all over the world are trying to draw attention to, because I hope that people realize how dangerous a path that is.
One of the things about this current round of book banning that I just don't understand, that it was different than when I was a kid. Right now, almost every kid has a device in their pocket that can get them any book that they want.
Yeah.
Any book, any show, any movie, anything is right there. And yet we're still fighting the libraries.
I don't know what to make of that. In some ways, I feel hopeful is the wrong. In some ways, that makes me think that maybe this is one of the last rounds of this kind of fight, or at least I hope it is. It's mostly, it seems to me, that the adults are the ones who are having trouble with this sort of, you know, the changing world. But the kids, I think, mostly seem to be pretty open and pretty interested in the world, and they want to see these stories. And as you point out, they can.
But I have to say, in reading for a living and talking to authors, it often is a point of, oh boy, that was really good, and I wonder why they didn't know how to end it. Your ending is beautiful, just perfect. Just
thank you.
I read it 5 times. It's just so beautiful and precise. How long did you work on that?
Well, thank you. That means a lot. For me, the ending was always something I was sort of building to, and it definitely took some reworking. But I think the heart of it, again, without giving anything away, sort of goes to the power of stories and the way that we want to hold on to them and we want to pass them on to people. And no matter how hard outside forces try to suppress stories or to keep those stories from going any further, I think that it's so human that that's ultimately not possible. We're always going to be telling stories to each other. And so they're always going to get passed on. Even if every book in the world gets pulped and turned to toilet paper, we'll still be telling stories to each other. And that means that those stories and those people are going to live on. And for me, that is a hugely hopeful thing to remember.
Celeste Ng's new novel is Our Missing Hearts. It is published by Penguin Press. Celeste, what a delight to speak with you. Thank you very much. Congratulations on the gorgeous novel, and thank you so much for talking to us about it.
Thank you so much. It was really a joy to get to talk with you.
Celeste Ng's new novel is Our Missing Hearts. It's published by Penguin Press. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about our shows. You can email us at book@wamc.org. You can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or at wamc.org. Sarah LeDuc produces our program. Bookmark us for next week. Thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.